News Talk 1400 KFRU is proud to present the KFRU Heritage Series. It's a one-hour perspective on the events and the people whose lives have contributed to the heritage of Boone County. Listen each Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. The KFRU Heritage Series. From News Talk 1400, KFRU.
This Heritage Show, our guest is Stephen Gaither. Now you'll say, okay, when did I read about him? Early in the month of January 2018, he retired after many years with the Harry S. Truman Memorial Veterans Hospital, and he's our guest. Thank you for agreeing to be our guest today. Thank you.
Thank you, David.
So let's talk. I'm going to start with the VA hospital. When did you first start working at the hospital?
We transferred from another VA medical center to Columbia in September of 1977.
Where were you prior to that?
We were in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Had you been to Columbia? Had you been to Missouri much?
Never been to Columbia. I had been through Missouri on a couple of cross-country trips and stuff, but never thought that would be where we'd land.
Were you doing the same thing in Utah that you ended up starting doing here at Missouri?
That's right. I was involved in directing volunteer programs and in a training program. My first permanent assignment after that training program was Columbia, Missouri. I came here as the chief of voluntary service, collateral duty, public affairs, and my wife and I had decided that we'd probably be here about 3 years. And then we'd move on and have other opportunities within the VA healthcare system.
Where are you from originally?
I grew up in Utah, went to school in Colorado. My wife is from Montana, and so the West was our orientation. She knew we were going to the East when we learned we were coming to Columbia, Missouri, and that was a little frightening to her.
Did you miss, see, now you've said the West, and when I hear about Colorado and Utah and Montana, I'm thinking, man, that's beautiful country out there.
It's very beautiful country, and of course the mountains are very beautiful and beautiful to be around. And we only miss them when we go back and see them again.
Yeah. Missouri feels like home now, I guess, after
absolutely.
40 plus years.
Years, yes.
Goodness, why did you start working at the VA?
I had previous experience with VA. I actually met my wife through VA. She was directing volunteers. She was part of the volunteer program in Salt Lake City. I was working for the American Red Cross, and I was directing youth service programs, placing youth volunteers around the city with various assignments, and the VA hospital was one of those assignments. That's how I met my wife. We ended up getting married. About a year after getting married, I learned about a training opportunity, and I applied, and I got selected for the training opportunity.
Where'd you go to school in Colorado?
University of Denver.
Ah, yes. I know other people who have connections with the University of Denver, so that's kind of interesting. That's a nice college there. When you... one of the things that we can do in this program is also educate people. So when you're talking about directing like volunteer services for something like the VA hospital, you can help us understand how much of what it gets accomplished at a hospital like that is from volunteer work.
Well, a great deal, actually, and the VA Voluntary Service Program is actually the oldest federal volunteer program in the country. It's been around since right after World War II. And here in Columbia, that program, you know, there's 700, 800 individuals who are involved as volunteers with regular assignments. They provide a lot of hours of service, not only hours of service, but also contribute donations for the benefit of the patients and for veterans.
What kind of things are they doing? 700 to 800, that's a lot of volunteers.
That's a lot of, and there are multiple different assignments. You've got volunteers that help with the information desk. You've got volunteers who help transport patients around the building. You've got volunteers who are visitors. You've got volunteers who help with the chaplain services. You've got volunteers who help in all kinds of different ways to supplement the staff.
When you say volunteers who are visitors, is that what you said?
Yeah, assignment. So they have an assignment to go and regularly visit with patients, for example, in the long-term care unit, who may not have very many family members, if any, and some don't have any at all.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking that you were going to say, and that's a nice service sad that it is necessary because people wouldn't have visitors otherwise if there hadn't been volunteers. But those volunteers probably don't look at it as a job. They look at it as something that's very special for them to be able to visit with these people.
Absolutely. And one of the newer assignments took place when we developed a hospice program and having in-house hospice beds at Truman VA. And the philosophy, the treatment that no one should die alone, there would be volunteers who actually will be with an individual who is in the stages of dying, just so that individual is not alone during that process.
How much contact, how much, as you had various duties over 40 years with the VA hospital here in Columbia, how much contact did you have with patients and with those who you might know some of their story and what they did to serve our country and how they were spending their time in the
VA? That was one of the advantages of the different jobs that I had. I had lots of interaction with patients. Sometimes it was when they weren't very happy, but through those experiences, I got to know a lot of different people. Also, in my role with public affairs and being out in the community and interacting with veterans organizations, I would attend meetings and make presentations and have, because of the longevity, people got to know me and they figured, well, I'll call him or I'll contact him if I've got an issue. And I met a lot of veterans over the years. I heard their stories. I got involved with some other organizations like the Missouri Veterans History Project. Again, stories are the best way to find out about people, and I had that opportunity.
Missouri Veterans History Project, I'm wondering if that's the same one that I know that there is a state senator that's been involved in that some, but I'm not sure if
that's
it's the same
organization. Is it Jill Shoup initiated, and I
so
was
what
part
are they,
of that.
What is she
group.
Trying to do? Because I interviewed her many years ago about this, because I think it's a good project, too.
Well, it was to tie into the National Veterans History Project that's been around for almost 20 years now through the Library of Congress. And it was using resources. Her idea was to use the resources of the University of Missouri and those students to really help get the stories, particularly for the World War II veterans, because they were dying off so rapidly. It continues to be an important activity. It's volunteer-driven. The current board is really based out of the St. Louis area rather than the Columbia area, but there are locations or chapters of the History Project throughout the state.
Do they, to me, what I understood this is, I might take a recorder in and sit down and talk with somebody, just interview somebody. Is that part of this?
Absolutely. You can do it with an audio recording. You can do a video. Most of the stories that the Missouri Veterans History Project did was with video. And that took volunteers to do the video, volunteers to do the interviews, volunteers to help with documenting, making sure it was long enough to meet the criteria for the History Project in the Library of Congress.
Lengthwise, you mean the interview has
to be
a certain
length of time? Yes.
So where are these stored? I mean, do people have access to them? Are they electronically retrievable, or would you have to physically go someplace?
They are electronically retrievable through the Library of Congress. They're also available with the Missouri
State Historical Society,
and copies are provided to the veteran or the veteran's family.
So how many of these would be done normally? In other words, everybody who would come to the VA hospital would have a story, but you don't ask everybody whether that man or woman wants to be a part of the history project.
No, and in fact, most of the stories were outside the VA hospital. Okay. It was really some other kinds of activity to get attention
Ongoing and still...
continues to happen. The local activity isn't as robust as it once was, but yes, it's still available.
And you're still involved with it now, maybe?
I'm not on the board any longer, and so I haven't been involved for a few months now.
So I want to go back to what you saw, and I understand I'm not asking for information that you cannot share in regard to personal information of people who would be patients at the VA hospital, but if you were telling us who's at the VA hospital, if you were doing kind of a composite, several different descriptions of people who would be at the VA hospital.
Well, it's changed a whole lot over those 40 years that I've been at the VA Medical Center in Columbia. One of the last projects I did before I retired was to develop a journey line, a history of Truman VA. I went back to some of those times when budgets were tight, Congress wasn't providing enough money to VA, and there were reductions in budgets, reductions in services. I remember some of the late 70s when we were discharging veterans from care, saying, I'm sorry, we can't take care of you any longer. You don't have a service-related injury, so we can't take care of you. There was an eligibility reform in the mid-90s that changed a lot of that. There was a transformation of the VA healthcare system in the 90s. Went away from just being a hospital-based system to a full-service healthcare delivery system. And when they did that, it really opened the door to every veteran in the country who had an opportunity to enroll in the VA healthcare system if they wanted. It was very successful because from 1998 to 2003, any veteran who had a discharge other than dishonorable could apply and be enrolled in the VA healthcare system.
And get healthcare regardless of what the situation. Like you said, in the late 70s, it was if you didn't have a injury or an illness that was related to your service, we can't
get you there. The priority, and they continue to be the priority. Mm-hmm. But when there were tight budgets, the group that was affected was the veteran who did not have a service-related injury or illness. And in those days, they had different cards. There was a purple card for a service-connected veteran and a blue card for a non-service-connected veteran.
What turned things around then after the budget crunch and where you weren't able to medically treat all of those who needed treatment or wanted treatment from the VA hospital? What changed in the 80s then?
Well, there were some national changes. There was a change. The Veterans Administration ceased to exist, became the Department of Veterans Affairs, a cabinet-level department. So the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, beginning in 1989, was a member of the cabinet. And that did enhance resources for the organization. But like all federal programs, there's ups and downs depending upon the whims of the funding organization, the U.S. Congress. But that did change a lot of the perspective. And then the eligibility reform changed it a lot in the mid-90s.
When you said you're doing like a journey line in the history of a Truman VA hospital, did you finish that before you retired?
I did, and I got to present it.
So is it a book? Is it published?
It's actually a PowerPoint with a lot of photographs.
Yeah.
It's not a public document, at least right now, but it's available to the staff and the management at Truman VA.
So what conclusions? I'm going to pick your brain about this a bit more. We'll take a break here in a moment, but I'm just general conclusions. What did you learn from that? What struck you as you did that project?
Well, a lot of the memories that I had of the hard times came back, which I had tended to forget. And we've been on a roll for the last decade here in Columbia with a lot of resources, a lot of building, a lot of construction, a lot of changes that are all viewed as positive. And I remembered some of those less than positive experiences.
Yeah. When was the VA hospital built in Columbia?
It was built from 1969 to 1972. It opened, the first patient was admitted in April of 1972.
Is that about the same time the Hearn Center opened?
It was the same year. Hearn Center, I think, opened a little earlier, but
Right across the street.
And before that time, there wasn't much on that part of the campus except the football stadium.
Yeah. So what would have been in the area where the VA hospital stands now?
There were some big fields, and Ray Beck, who longtime
city manager
and public works, talks about the blasting that had to take place on that piece of ground because there's so much rock.
When they were
doing the construction for the VA hospital.
I think I've talked to other people who I think they go back a lot longer than for this program, the Heritage Show, back a lot longer than late 60s or so, who talk about farm area and other areas up in through that area there. But
Ray talked about a big sinkhole that took place at Kentucky and Providence, too, at some point in the 60s.
We're going to take a break. We'll come back. Stephen Gaither is our guest. It's the Heritage Show, and this is KFRU.
This is the KFRU Heritage Series. More coming up on News Talk 1400, KFRU. This is the KFRU Heritage Series.
On the Heritage Show today, we're talking in particular about the Truman Memorial Veterans Hospital in Columbia with Stephen Gaither, but we're talking also about some of the other activities that he's been involved in this community. And the list is pretty long, so we'll hopefully get to that later in our conversation, but I really like the conversation about the VA hospital. You said it was started in 1969, completed in 1972, and a lot of people will remember that that was Hearn Center's opening at that point in time. While we were in break, you were talking about how Rockbridge High School, around the same time, further south on Providence. So that's kind of, that was on the border, southern border of Columbia at that point in time, sort of.
That's my understanding. I wasn't here for that, but that's my understanding.
So when you did start in 1977, if you're going to, if we drove by the Veterans Hospital now and we were driving by in 1977, tell us what 1977 looked like.
Well, in 1977, there was no traffic lights on Stadium Boulevard. Turning into University Hospital or Truman Hospital. 77, the hospital had, the name had changed. The name was changed in 1975 when a local congressman decided to recognize former President Truman.
What had it been before
then? Columbia Veterans Administration Hospital. Hmm. And then in January 1975, it became the Harry S. Truman Memorial Veterans Hospital. And a period after Harry's middle initial, apostrophe after veterans, making sure that the public affairs officer would always have a job explaining the name. Because there's no need for a period after the middle initial, it was a middle initial only, and making it plural possessive just leads to a lot of confusion.
So how do you explain that?
It was just the work of a congressman who had good intentions and probably wasn't a very good student.
Oh, but the
history.
Congress and his the congressman and his staff
and his
filed
staff.
It that way.
Right.
Once it was approved, it would be too much trouble to change.
You know, if you're a real student of VA or veteran history in mid-Missouri, former President Truman didn't spend a whole lot of time in central Missouri. Western Missouri would have been a more appropriate place, probably the Kansas City VA Medical Center. And Omar Bradley would have been a good choice to name the facility. He was born in Clark, raised in Moberly. He happened to be not only a famous World War II general, but he was the administrator of Veterans Affairs in the Truman administration, which is the largest expansion of veterans benefits in American history when the first GI Bill was passed.
Hmm. Too bad you weren't here. You might have been able to stop and say, this makes more sense. Who was the congressman? You haven't mentioned the congressman.
I think it was Richard Eichord.
Yeah.
But someone who was here at that time might be able to confirm that.
But they did have a VA hospital in Kansas City at that time,
they
right?
They did. They'd had one for
quite
a while.
Had it already been named?
No, it was the Kansas City VA hospital.
But they probably had, there's a Truman Hospital in Kansas City, though, also. So I don't know when it was named or what its name was. But that would have been
either interesting.
Yeah. Maybe that might have been, although I think I'm stretching it a bit there and I'm just speculating and guessing on that. So how big was the hospital facility itself in 1977?
1977, being primarily an inpatient facility, it had close to 300 beds, taking care of maybe 10, 11,000 veterans.
So how many beds are there now?
100, that's a good question. See, I'm away for 3 weeks and I can't remember. 124 beds now.
Well, that's interesting because then it went from 300 to 124.
Well, the transformation of the VA healthcare system in the mid-90s changed the whole philosophy of delivering healthcare. And the majority of care is delivered on an outpatient basis. So today, we're taking care at Truman VA. They're taking care of 39,000 veterans. They're doing 450,000 outpatient visits a year. Back in the mid-90s, it was 15,000 veterans and 100,000 outpatient visits. Also, 8 satellite community clinics through northern and southern central Missouri are managed by Truman VA so that we can provide access to primary care and basic mental health service to the veterans in those areas. They don't have to travel all the way to Columbia for those services.
Has there always been mental health service through the VA hospital?
There has always been a mental health service, and of course, it probably is the most robust mental health program in the country because of the anticipated needs of the returning combat veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm. Curious as to, and again, this is one of those education moments. You talk about the satellite locations or clinics. Do you have to be from a certain geographical area to be able to seek service or have service at Truman VA?
No. It's a choice of the individual veteran as to where they want to get their primary care. And a lot of the veterans who live, every county in the United States is assigned to a VA medical center. So that's your primary service area. But veterans can choose wherever they want to go for their primary care. And historically, a lot of veterans have selected Columbia or one of our satellite clinics to come to rather than other VA medical centers.
Speaks highly of the Columbia Center, then.
It speaks highly of the Columbia Center. It also is a reflection of the area that we serve. All of those counties except Boone County are rural. Many mm-hmm. of the counties around them are also rural. And those veterans historically have been more comfortable coming to a place like Columbia rather than to metropolitan areas like St. Louis or Kansas City.
Curiosity question. My dad was a World War II veteran, but he didn't ever come to the VA hospital for any treatment that he needed, and he needed quite a bit at the end of his life. Help me as a uneducated person on this. How do people decide, well, I'm going to get my service or my medical treatment at the VA as opposed to any other hospital around the area?
Again, it's an individual choice. There's been changes in eligibility. The primary group that the healthcare system was created to take care of are veterans who have a service-related injury or illness. But other veterans have achieved a status just below that high priority. And then veterans who don't have a service-related injury or illness meet eligibility criteria based on income. And
We
always advise people to apply.
Uh-huh.
It's better to find out you are eligible or not eligible than to just assume you're not.
How, again, I guess this is the nuts and bolts of how a VA hospital is run, but how are things billed? How are things paid for?
The majority of the money comes from congressional allocations to the Department of Veterans Affairs. It's divided amongst three different administrations, benefits, health, and cemeteries. And then within the health system, it goes to an entity called a Veterans Integrated Service Network. And then the network distributes the funds to those facilities in its, and that's about probably about 90% of the funding that takes place at a VA medical center. The other 10% comes from third-party payers, insurance for non-service connected care, and other means, other types of co-payments from non-service-connected veterans for non-service-connected
care. But other than that, is it free care for a eligible veteran?
Well, free care is always an interesting term.
Yeah.
If you're making a co-payment, it's not free.
Right.
But and if your insurance company is being billed, it's not free. You may not have to pay a co-payment through the insurance, but it's not free. The majority of veterans, however, are going to be eligible for care that's not going to cost them anything or not cost them very much.
Mm-hmm. What was the 1977 through maybe the mid-80s, what was it a veteran from World War II?
It was primarily World War II veterans, some World War I veterans. I remember when we got here in 77, there were a number of World War I veterans who were volunteers. And I remember some stories of a man named Clarence Heisel. And he talked about he liked to play the piano, and he talked about playing the piano in the state capitol. And then another World War I veteran was a guy named Henry C. Doc Nielsen. He was a retired pharmacist. And Doc was very active in getting things named after General Pershing. And the park that we had outside the hospital is named Pershing Memorial Park because Doc made sure that the park was named after General Pershing.
I did not realize it. Is it still there?
The new version is there.
Uh-huh.
It's been moved further to the west as construction has moved the old park.
When did you start to see a transition into, I don't know, was there Korean War veterans that you saw, or was it just kind of a transition
There's
into
not
the
a
Vietnam,
lot of difference or? In age between the World War II and the Korean
right.
veterans. And so that transition was taking place. You started to see more Vietnam veterans. The first Vietnam veteran, I saw an old headline about the first Vietnam veteran treated in Columbia was in 1972.
Hmm.
But for a long time, many Vietnam veterans wanted nothing to do with VA, the government, or anybody else. And so, and oftentimes they weren't immediately eligible. So long histories of eligibility and frustration and took place with that group.
Interesting, because that would almost make it sound like politics plays into. I mean, politics, I guess, impacts the VA.
Absolutely.
I mean,
and even more so when it's a Department of Veterans Affairs.
Oh, really? Explain.
Well, as a member of the secretary is a member of the president's cabinet, So you're part of the administration. You're part of the executive branch of the federal government. If there's a conflict between the executive branch and the legislative branch, you get caught in between. You're seeing some of that now.
Sure. So, yeah. Stephen Gaither is our guest. We're going to continue on in this segment and then have one more segment after this. I'm jump around in this program quite a bit. What has most recently been done at the Harry S. Truman Memorial Veterans Administration Hospital? What Veterans Hospital? I know the parking garage on the east side, right?
Parking garage opened more than a year ago, November of 2016.
Yeah.
A new patient education center opened in January of 2017. The new intensive care unit opened earlier, late 2017. There's an inpatient surgical unit adjacent to the intensive care unit that is slated to open this month. And then the long-term plans are that all inpatient care will be no higher than the third floor of the facility. So that means moving patients from the fourth floor to the third floor, and their long-term care unit on the third floor will be moved out of the main building into a brand new structure that will be built on the west side of the facility in what is now a parking lot.
There's not much parking lot on the west side, though, is there?
There is a parking lot that accommodates most of the physician staff.
Yeah.
And there, when the second parking garage is built, then they'll be shifted to the parking garage, and that space will be available for construction of a new community living center.
Will the second parking garage be built where there is surface parking now?
Yes, it's right adjacent to the first on the east side.
So it would be there. I have I think I'm getting too deep into this, but somebody has asked me this question. When you're going along, is that Maryland? What's the street that goes along kind of the west side going?
The west side is now Tiger.
Yeah, it's Tiger.
Avenue.
It used to be Maryland,
I think. Maryland Avenue.
There's some buildings there that look like they're construction headquarters.
There is a double level modular building that currently houses human resources and some other administrative staff. The idea is that will go away at some point in the future. Now, that could take place or it may not. There was another temporary structure for the construction of the ambulatory care addition, which changed the front of the VA hospital, made the main entrance on the east side rather than the north side. Mm-hmm. That temporary structure has been there since the construction that ended in 1998. It's the permanent home of our facilities management service.
So 20 years of
so you never know about
temporary.
Those temporary facilities, whether or not they're temporary or not.
Where's the closest? You talk about long-term care. You know, the dream is you're going to have a building that will be dedicated to long-term care.
Correct.
Is that correct? Aren't there veterans homes different places?
There are 7 state veterans homes in the state of Missouri operated by the Missouri Veterans Commission. It's a state agency, and it's a state activity. Those beds are supported a great deal by the Department of Veterans Affairs with a per diem that's paid for every veteran that's in one of those beds.
So what you're talking about at the Truman Hospital will be different than that.
That's different, and that's a long-term care facility within the VA Medical Center, and there are hundreds of those around the country. And the one here in Columbia has 35 beds right now.
Are they in demand, much in demand?
They are, and there's very strict criteria for service-connected capability, those kinds of things.
How did you maintain your sanity in a entity that has a whole lot of governmental rules and regulations?
So you're making the assumption that I did maintain my sanity.
Yeah, I think you did.
There are many times when I pretty much proved to myself that I did not maintain my sanity. But the idea was I was very much moved with the idea of the mission, the mission of helping veterans. My father was a World War II veteran. My brother is a veteran. I served active duty and in the Air National Guard. And so I felt an obligation there. I really grew into that mission as well with the different experiences that I had over the years at Truman VA.
Oh, let's end after this on this particular segment. I would say, and you can tell me true or false on this and where I'm wrong or where I'm right, all people who are staff members or on the medical staff, it seems to me like they would have to be kind of there for what you just described as your reason of wanting to do well and do right for the veterans at that hospital.
Well, we would hope that all people are. One of the reasons why Truman VA has maintained its reputation for good customer service and quality care is the fact that the vast majority of our employees have bought into that mission, and they live it every day.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that you would have to feel like, especially for people in leadership roles there. It seems to me.
The most important group are the frontline staff.
Yeah.
Because they're the first contact with a veteran. And if that's a positive experience, guess what? The veteran says, I think I'll come back.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not a positive experience, they may think about something else.
We'll pause for our final break and we'll come back with our concluding segment. Stephen Gaither is our guest. We're talking about his time as how many different roles did you have with the hospital?
I had three distinct roles.
Okay.
But public affairs was a role throughout.
Yeah, I think that's
collateral duty from 77 to 96.
Many people would remember that as your chief role in reaching out to the community that way. We'll be back with another segment. It's the Heritage Show on KFRU.
This is the KFRU Heritage Series. More coming up on News Talk 1400, KFRU. This is the KFRU Heritage Series.
We got one more segment with Stephen Gaither, who has been our guest on this Heritage Show, and we're talking about the Harry S. Truman Memorial Veterans Hospital, learning about that, and then haven't really picked your brain a whole lot about your own experiences here. But, you know, when you talk about down times and good times, I suppose that to be able to weather those and to get through those, what's it take? What do you think of as leadership as far as those who have been the leaders of the hospital and what you, I guess I should back up and say, it's kind of like when we look at Congress as a whole, we might get one attitude. When we look at our local congressperson, we might have a different attitude. So people might have a whole attitude for the Veterans Administration, but then they might say, oh, no, our local doesn't fit into that mold. You know what I'm talking
about? Well, I do know what you're talking about, David, and it's very similar to what happens with Congress. You find people that go, well, I really like my congressperson, but I don't really like Congress. And the same thing happens with VA medical centers. Oh, I've heard all those negative stories and stuff, but you know, it's my VA medical center. I really like it. And you see that around the country. Fortunately, here in Columbia, there's been strong support for the facility over the years, and it continues to be strong. Now, I think we earn that, or I shouldn't stop. I'm no longer we, but
yeah,
I think the facility earns that by how they treat veterans every single day.
When you look back, and I know you haven't been gone from it at the recording when we're doing this recording, but when you look back and say, you know what, I this was a hard time, this was a difficult time, does it go around news making events? Does it go around things we don't even know about? What would you say were dark, deep times of struggle?
Probably my personal challenges were the public challenges. There were some times in the history of the facility where our reputation was really in the toilet, and that was a very tough time. It was a tough time for the morale of the staff. It was a tough time for managers. It was certainly a tough time for my role in public affairs, and probably I grew a whole lot from those experiences.
So how did you survive that? What made it possible to pull through that?
Probably an underlying confidence that the facility was still doing right most of the time, and that the vast majority of veterans were getting the care that they deserved and had earned.
It's a horrible thing to have to go through, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And anybody who's been through that crisis, who've been through typical crisis situations, crisis communications, you know how difficult that can be. But
but few have been there where it's lives that were lost or lives that were online.
Correct.
And I know I gather you don't feel comfortable talking much more about it than that, but I think that that is something that anybody who's been in this community for a while is aware of what we're talking
about.
I've
dubbed that whole experience the never-ending story.
Yeah.
Because it never ended, and it still hasn't ended. And it was frustrating to me because of the public perception and the public statements made by so many people who had opinions, and they repeated them often enough that of course
that became the narrative.
That became the narrative.
But how come, and this is kind of interesting, for someone who's done it as long as you have with that public information type officer role, how do you combat that? How do you try to change that so that it doesn't happen? Because I think anybody who's had the role that you had, they've, for a long time, they've had to go through those kinds of things, whether it's at the university, whether it might be a corporation. I mean, they face those kinds of things and they say, public, what you are getting is not accurate.
So you fill any void with accurate information and you talk about the good things that the facility is doing.
Hmm. How can the story end? You say it's a never-ending story.
I don't know that that story will ever end because I don't think anyone will ever really know what happened in the spring of 1992.
Yeah. Hmm. And that was that was involving
a number of patients who died on a particular medical unit.
Yep.
And allegations that was that there was an individual nurse that was responsible for that.
Who helped the hospital survive? Was it just time that makes the difference there? Or
what really helped the hospital survive were the patients who kept coming back for care, who kept saying, gosh, I'm getting good care. I'm getting good service. What's this got to do with what I'm hearing from all this, the public story?
Yeah. How come you got so involved in the community? Was it to help help others see the good things that were happening at the hospital, or was there something else that motivated you?
I think it was something else that motivated me. I think personal philosophy. Early on, I did volunteer work as a young person, and there was a phrase that I sort of became my mantra that public service is the price we pay for the space we occupy. Hmm. And so that's kind of been a philosophy that I put in place throughout my life.
You said way back in this interview, in this program, that you and your wife, when you came here in 1977, said, three and a half years, and we'll move on. What happened?
Well, I had started to apply for some other jobs within the VA hospital, and like the military model, that was a way to get promoted.
Mm-hmm.
And in early 1981, I had an opportunity to apply for a job in the hospital that was in the Office of the Chief of Staff. And to my surprise, I got selected. And then I learned all about healthcare administration by actually doing that for 15 and a half years in the Office of the Chief of Staff at the VA facility.
That was in the early 80s.
81 through 96.
So, this is a nasty question, but 37 or so years ago, how was healthcare managed? You said you learned all about how it was administered at that point in time, from the office to now. I can't imagine what changes.
I learned all about accreditation, and I learned all about quality assurance and quality improvement, and I learned about credentialing healthcare providers, and I learned about managing strong personalities of healthcare providers. And, I mean, I had all those opportunities in that role. And as an assistant to the chief of staff, in those days, our clinical services had a physician service chief and a secretary. They might have an assistant chief physician, but they didn't really have administrative support. So that fell to the office of the chief of staff. And so I got involved with lots of those things.
How often does a chief of staff change?
It depends on how well the facility is doing. If it's crisis time, there tends to be a high turnover and frequent turnover. If the facility is stable, then chiefs of staff will stay around longer because they're impacting, they're recruiting good staff, and people like the job that's being done. And that's the good fortune that we've had at Truman VA recently, because Dr. Zara has been outstanding as a chief of staff, and she's been able to recruit an outstanding group of providers.
The future for the hospital is bright, in your opinion?
I believe that as long as there is a VA healthcare system, the future in Columbia is bright.
Talk about some of the other things you did. As I was reading when they announced your retirement from there, and it's a retirement from there. You've told me off the air that you might be, doing something else, and that'd be great. I hope that you do, because I think your talents would be well welcomed in certain things. But it says that you were the primary representative in the partnership in education with Frederick Douglass High School. What was that like?
Douglass High School, of course, is the alternative high school here in Columbia, and that That partnership was initiated 19 school years ago, and we were one of three satellite programs at the time where Douglas students spend their entire day at the facility. Hmm. We're the last satellite program. But today, up to 10 Douglas students will spend their entire day at the facility. Half the day, they're in a classroom with a Douglas teacher working on a self-directed computerized program to get their high school credits. The other half day, they're in paid jobs. And those are entry-level positions, but most of those students come from a lower socioeconomic background, and so a paycheck is a significant factor in keeping them in school. And I had the good fortune to be the primary liaison with that partnership the whole time. So,
have you seen some great successes with
absolutely.
That, I would
guess? We hired a handful of those students into permanent jobs. Became more difficult when there was a higher emphasis on hiring veterans rather than non-veterans, but certainly exposed them to the idea of working in healthcare. Many of them post-high school got healthcare training and have worked in healthcare. But more importantly, they graduated. They had a motivation to graduate, and we saw that success. And
Is that in demand? They like you fill that pretty easily, 10 doing that?
They do a very rigid requirement at Douglas High School to make sure that the students that are picked will succeed. And then those students have to interview with the supervisors at the hospital to get hired. So
we have a minute and a half left. What else would you say that I haven't asked you?
I've spent a lot of time with the local United Way.
Yeah.
I was on the board for years. I was part of the allocations process for a long, long time. I still volunteer with the United Way, did some work in the most recent campaign. Again, we talked about that I've got a lot of grandchildren in town, and I'm going to spend a lot of time with grandchildren.
I think some people would be envious of knowing that all of your grandchildren are in local.
Not all of them, but most.
Most of them are local. Some people would say that'd be great to have them close by. So that's going to keep you busy during retirement as well as other things.
Yes.
When did you think Columbia became your home?
Probably after 10 years. That was the longest I'd lived anywhere except when I grew up.
So. Yeah. Well, I think you get to see a whole lot of things at the VA hospital. I mean, you've seen a whole lot there.
I have.
Because you were there. If it didn't open until 1972, just think, you were a part of that for all but the 5 years over a 45-year time period.
That's right.
Well, thank you very much for taking time to join us. I know this is something just to come in and talk and not know where we're going or what we're going to do, but
I've appreciated it.
Thank you.
Thank you, David.
Stephen Gaither retired from the Harry S. Truman Memorial Veterans Hospital early January of 2018 after 41-plus years of service there. Been an integral part of our community, and I'm glad that he has been a part of our Heritage Show series. We'll be back with another one next time. You're listening to Newstalk 1400 KFRU.
You've been listening to the KFRU Heritage Series, celebrating our history and heritage of Columbia and Boone County. Listen each Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m. The KFRU Heritage Series. From News Talk 1400, KFRU, Columbia.